Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference, joined, as I always am, by my great friend and co-host, Mr. Brent Beard. Brent, it was a dominant Saturday for a handful of teams around the Southeastern Conference. We'll get into Texas, we'll get into Bama, we'll get into Ole Miss, we'll get into South Carolina on the road at Vanderbilt. But first, we certainly want to wish a happy Veterans Day to everyone out there, but especially those who serve or have served our country. Without all of you folks, there is no us. There is no greatest country in the world. So want to take care of that first and foremost, Brent, as we get started on this Monday morning.
Yeah, and I really wish that. I know basically about half the people work today and half the people are off. I really think the significance of it, everybody ought to be off to celebrate. I know my dad was in the Air Force for 4 years and had a lot of uncles who also served. I know you did in your family something similar, so I agree totally with that. Hopefully it's a incredible Veterans Day for folks as they remember the sacrifices and some of the ultimate sacrifices they made.
No doubt about it. Maternal side of the family. You remember my late grandfather very well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jimmy Dumas served in World War II on the wife's side. Boy, her father was a Marine sergeant. Her mother served. Her brother, her nephew now, or has. So again, it runs deep in most families we know. And again, sincerest, deepest thanks to all those folks out there. And you know what? We're live on this Monday once again. So we love to hear the chatter from the show chat. There is Tex Titer chiming in. He offers a heartfelt howdy boys from Texas. Tex Titer. And Ben checking in, letting us know he's in as well. But again, a very interesting Saturday in the Southeastern Conference. And really, when you look at the league standings coming out of it, Brent, 3 1-loss teams now, with Tennessee at 5-1, Texas A&M at 5-1, Texas at 5-1. We know, based on some matchups coming up here down the stretch in November, real possibility that we end up with just 1 1-loss team. But boy, when you look at the 2-loss teams now, Georgia after the loss at Ole Miss, Alabama after the win at LSU, and then Ole Miss now. You know, we thought we were done with Ole Miss, and we'll get into that game coming up here in just a little bit, but still so much that can play out in terms of just the SEC championship game and the type of matchup we still might have.
You know, what's amazing is there's some speculation, and look, there would have to be a lot to happen with this, but we can have 6 teams that are 10-2. So that will be rather fascinating. Now, obviously, as you mentioned, Tennessee, A&M, and Texas, Texas, A&M, and Texas play each other, so there will be something different there. But I would have to think that the offices in Birmingham for the SEC travel are rather excited about this this close race for the top and all the interest they're getting right now.
Yeah, and just like Saturday, this past Saturday was sort of a playoff Saturday.
Yeah,
it felt like in the Southeastern Conference. It's only going to ramp up in the coming weeks because we know we're going to have Georgia-Tennessee coming up this Saturday in Athens. That's a primetime kickoff on ABC. The 23rd, that weekend's going to be the same way. And certainly, you know, when you go into Thanksgiving weekend with the matchups you're going to have to cap the regular season, it's going to feel that way. And with all the potential for all of these 2-loss teams, do you really want to be a 2-loss team that makes it to Atlanta? Because you're potentially a 3-loss team. How does that get factored into all of this? And I would think if there's 4 playoff teams from the SEC and you make it as a 2-loss team to Atlanta, I would think you would be in those 4 teams, but this is all unprecedented. We still don't know how all this is going to play out where the CFP is concerned.
You know, one of the biggest questions on one of these Tuesday nights that they can ask the college football playoff chairman is basically that question. Would be if you've got You've got two teams in your conference championship game. They've got two losses. If it's a close loss, maybe in overtime, and that would be loss number three, how would the committee view that? Would that be automatic that they would not be in? Would that be still because they made the championship game that both may get in the playoffs? Trev, I think right now, and I think this will be fleshed out as the week goes along, I think that's one of the biggest questions of the playoff at this point.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. And, you know, I think if you're a team like Alabama and you are in that two-loss mm-hmm. mode and you make it to Atlanta, there is a gaggle of two-loss teams. I would yeah. think Alabama might be able to survive mm-hmm. that the most of the two-loss teams because the metrics look to be very favorable
right.
for the Crimson Tide in terms of strength of schedule, in terms of win quality, you know, those type of things. But again, we just don't know. We don't know anything when it comes to this new format. But what we do know is, again, it was a very interesting Saturday in the Southeastern Conference. We'll start with that early game from Saturday out in Austin, Texas. Some worst fears were realized for the Florida Gators in that 49-17 humbling at the hands of the Texas Longhorns. First and foremost, didn't expect DJ Lagway to play, went through pregame warmups. It was billed as a game time decision. Billy Napier, Florida, make the decision. They're not going to go there with the future of that program. And certainly Billy Napier hoping that that vote of confidence he got late last week is going to follow through and he'll be a part of that. But it was Aiden Warner behind center for the Gators. What did we talk about late last week? We talked about Florida probably needing to be mm-hmm. plus two, plus three yep. in yep. turnover margin. We talked about Florida needing to kick the ball well. Trey Smack misses a chip shot field goal there in a 14-0 game, and it felt like any chance of momentum shifting towards Florida at that point totally went out the window. But, boy, give Texas a lot of credit. Massive day on the offensive side. Florida also missing some key guys in that secondary. And the Longhorns absolutely took advantage of all those things, Brent.
Yeah, in Aiden, 12 of 25 for 132. But the biggest thing, as you mentioned, would be the two picks that happened that caused him problems. And the guys that did not play, probably smart again to not play Lagway, maybe trying to get him ready for LSU or Ole Miss. Trev, I still think Montrell Johnson not playing is a real problem for them. If they could get Lagway and Johnson back for two out of three of these last games, I think that would be huge. Trey Wilson, Eli Badger, boy, those are guys that have really helped them as of late. So that's something they need to get going. But you're right about that. Texas was basically going on all cylinders at this point. So they deserve a lot of credit. Quinn Ewers, good job. I mean, he has his moments to where he struggles, but all in all, Texas basically able to do what they wanted. I can appreciate Florida scoring some late to keep it from being very embarrassing at that point, but this Texas team looks like in their first year that if things continue to go well for them, they will be in the SEC championship game. But again, we got that colossal game at the end of the season with A&M.
No doubt about it. And, you know, I agree with you on Montrell Johnson at the running back position. But, you know, Jacoby Jackson, Jaden Ball for the Gators, they combined to give Florida over 200 rushing yards mm-hmm. in the game. Now, you got to understand, a lot of that was after the fact. I mean, this is a 35-0 game. But still, you're right. You get all those backs together. I think Jackson had a big turnover in the mm-hmm. game, too. Ball, for a freshman, is one of my favorite backs in college football already. Yes. He is a big dude. Mm-hmm. He has savvy. He has instincts. Really like the future of that situation. The offensive line continues to show at times that it's capable of holding up against a legitimate high-level defensive front seven like the one it saw from Texas. But yeah, when Sark has it going with Quinn Ewers, you know, throwing for 333 on just 27 attempts and spreading the ball around like they were able to do it, not just to, you know, guys like Matthew Golden and a great tight end and Gunnar Helm, but
Yes.
You know, the backs are such a big part of what Sark likes to do in the passing game. So Jaden Blue catches three balls for 67 yards. Quintrevion Wisner catches three balls for 59 yards. You know, a lot of times you'll see backs in the passing game, Brent, and they might average 10 yards a catch, mm-hmm. something like that. But they're not averaging 20 plus, you know, when they catch the football. But,
yeah.
you know, Sark's not just check down Charlie when it comes to the backs. He'll run them on some vertical routes mm-hmm. and look to hurt you down the field with the backs too.
Well, I think the versatility of that offense is what's so impressive with them. They were having some problems, Trav, with slow starts mm-hmm. in the offensive line, and hopefully they're able and got some of that fixed. Jacoby Jackson, you meant averaging 6 yards against the Gators. Look, they've had some guys who have been hurt. They have been back. Andrew Makuba is one of the guys on that Texas defense. Six tackles, a couple solos, intercepted a tip pass. Boy, they've just got Trav, and people haven't watched them really. And I think this is funny to say, but there's some truth to it. I think people have just said, well, they're good, and I'm not really going to tune in on them. And as you mentioned, people really need to watch this Texas team. And I think something you said that really deserves a question here, Trav, is this, I think, with the growth of Texas, we're seeing the maturity of Sark and really just the potential of what he can do with this team.
Yeah, it feels like the pieces are in place, not just for a 2 or 3 year stretch, but yes. for the entirety of whatever run that Sark's going to have there in Austin. And it's not just in terms of organic recruiting either, because now in the world of NIL transfer portal, we've seen mm-hmm. the impacts that guys like Isaiah Bond coming in from Alabama have made. And we talk about spreading the ball around and how Texas throws it. They'll also hand it to a guy like Isaiah Bond and get mm-hmm. him involved, yeah. get those wide receivers involved in the perimeter run game as well. So Texas, very, very impressive, kind of predictable from mm-hmm. the Florida perspective. We'll see about DJ Lagway moving through this week and LSU coming up for the Gators. It's important still, I think, though, Brent, for Billy Napier to get one or two here.
No doubt. Absolutely.
We'll talk about this maybe more in relation with Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss and that Georgia win, but that's another one on the schedule that Scott Strickland, the AD for Florida, is going to have to endure that week, especially now with Ole Miss beating Kirby.
Yeah,
Lane beats really. Kirby. Lane's going to be in Gainesville in a couple of weeks. You thought maybe you could put a lot of that rhetoric and that narrative to bed by issuing that tweet late last week. I don't know how much good that's going to do as we move through the next couple of weeks. We talk about the Ole Miss Rebels and Lane Kiffin. You know, Lane never got Nick Saban, and he wasn't shy about letting you know that that pained him. You know, Lane wanted to get him, but he'll have to settle for Kirby, and I think he'll take it because it wasn't just a case of Lane Kiffin mastermind and drawing it up and calling it up. It was a case of Ole Miss on the lines of scrimmage doing to Georgia what Georgia has done pretty much to everyone not named Alabama over the last 4 or 5 years. Ole Miss, very, very impressive. We thought Ole Miss could hang in defensively much better with this group than in previous years. Walter Nolan, J.J. Pegues, Chris Paul Jr., that front seven. They absolutely did it. It was stunning in some ways, especially when you consider the start to the game with Jackson Dart suffering the ankle injury, then throwing the pick, the short field for Georgia. Georgia gets in on a fourth down play, goes up 7-0. Now you got to think backup quarterback. But that may have been the story of the game for Ole Miss.
Yeah.
When Dart came out, the Ole Miss offense actually sparked up with Simmons behind center.
Yeah, it really did. There's so many things here that are worth mentioning. In what Lane has done, this Grove Collective is – they're saying 10 to 12 million. They've got 42 D1 transfers on the roster. And see what's worked here. Lane's made this work. Florida State and their transfers trail, for whatever reason, it has not. So some seasons are better than others. But look, I'm with you. People, the thing they need to understand about Ole Miss is what they have done on the line of scrimmage with the Walter Nolans and the Prince of the U's and Jared Ivey and J.J. Pegues and the Perkins, the Perkins kid.
Darren Perkins is phenomenal.
He really is, isn't he?
It's a good mix, though. I mean, Perkins is a recruit. Pegues was a transfer, but that's been a while back.
Yes.
But sure, Nolan, Paul, Amos in the secondary, other guys in that secondary. And here's the thing, I think the difference. You mentioned Florida State. Mike Norvell is just not Lane Kiffin. He's just not.
No.
You know, when it comes to maybe overseeing a program and also just sort of having that dynamic about him, right? That makes your program attractive or gives your program that energy that it needs to sustain.
And listen, they did that damage on Saturday travel without Trey Harris, the best wide receiver in the league. Henry Parrish didn't play. You mentioned Dart kind of in and out a little bit, but look, you and I followed the Lane for years and know that his weakness coming in he's always wanted to run the ball, and I don't think he's got enough credit for that. But what Pete Golding, frankly, has done with his defense, I don't know if people saw that coming, Trav.
I think the stories from Oxford Saturday, I know Georgia fans want to take apart their team right now.
Yeah.
And I get that. It's kind of like Alabama after the Crimson Tide lost to Vanderbilt.
Sure.
But you got to give credit to Ole Miss as much as anything from a personnel perspective, the things we talked about. And Pete Golding very much validating himself as a defense coordinator after working in the shadow of Nick Saban at Alabama. Those were the stories for me Saturday. Austin Simmons coming off the bench and taking Ole Miss right down the field to tie the football game. The toughness, the continued toughness of Jackson Dart, that sustains a program too when you got that kind of guy at quarterback and you've had him for a while now. He's not just a one-year guy like a DJ at Florida State. That's another difference there.
Yeah.
This is a culturized guy at this point in Jackson Dart. And then the defense, and we can talk about Georgia too. And we kind of talked about this in previous shows. This isn't Georgia from the last 2 or 3 years. People around that program have been quick to say that. I think it starts with the offensive line, just not able to really dominate opponents like Ole Miss, like they have in the past. Just average up front, had some injuries up front that have been critical, continue to see some guys in and out of the lineup in that spot. I didn't think defensively Georgia played all that poorly on Saturday, but this Carson Beck situation and this offensive situation for the Dogs, it's not remedying itself anytime soon, best I can tell. And so, Carson Beck again, is he a guy that can raise boats around him? We just haven't seen that on a consistent basis at all this season.
No, and listen, Trav, how on Kirby-like are this numbers? They've committed 3 or more turnovers in 4 of their last 6 games. Have you ever seen Georgia receivers drop as many passes, frankly, as this group has so far? Good point on the offensive line. That offensive line has been beat up. And Kirby is going out of his way to talk about it. I think people have kind of ignored that until now about how thin they are at certain positions. And so, look, the point is, and this is not saying they're going away because they've got a humongous game this weekend, but, Trav, when you look at the turnovers and the drops and the offensive line and the struggles at quarterback, it's no wonder this offense is not scoring many points.
No, it's not. And we mentioned it and have countless others have done the same. When you lose Brock Bowers, you lose Ladd McConkey, you got to be able to come. But they've got a lot of number two types. I thought maybe Arian Smith could become sort of an Xavier Worthy for them in terms of explosive plays. But they've got a lot of number twos. They don't have a number one. And Brock Bowers was the rarity in that he was a number one.
Yes.
And he didn't play wide receiver. But you could hand it to Brock Bowers. You didn't even have to throw it to him to get explosive plays. There's just not that right now for the Georgia offense. And so you said it later in the week. We'll have plenty to talk about as it relates to the Georgia Bulldogs and that home clash with the first place Tennessee Vols coming up on Saturday night from Sanford Stadium. Hey, let's keep it moving in that afternoon window from Saturday. I liked South Carolina on the road at Vanderbilt. We pointed to South Carolina on the road. When you add up the score differential, they don't just win on the road this season.
Yeah, really.
They ran it 3-1 in the league in four road games this season. They hammered Kentucky. They hammered Oklahoma. They lost narrowly to Alabama and Tuscaloosa and then kept the thing going in Nashville Saturday with a very impressive 28-7 win over the bowl-bound Vanderbilt Commodores. I thought Lenore Sellers was efficient at the quarterback position. Rocket Sanders, very good running the football and catching the football with a couple of grabs for 52 yards. This was sort of the blueprint way that if South Carolina was going to have success this year, this is kind of how it would have to go.
You know, one thing we've talked about in September was how much would their offense change when Sanders got healthy, and it's made all the difference in the world, hadn't it, Travis?
Yeah.
I mean, Rocket is, we know what we saw at Arkansas, so we see so far at South Carolina, what a difference he's made. The slow but steady maturity of Sellers has made a difference. So what we're talking about here is something what we've also talked about throughout the fall is, look, this defense with Kyle Kennard and this crew, we know how good they are with the offense, at least be able to handle their own weight in every game. Trev, that's happening, and this could go from an average year to a frankly to a much better year that maybe these South Carolina fans thought would happen.
Yeah, there's still a lot of good stuff on the table for South Carolina here down the stretch, and boy, whenever you're able to convert 9 of 12 on third down, like South Carolina did, and this goes back. We'll talk about this with Jalen Milroe in Alabama coming up. And just, it was a weekend for the dual threat type of running quarterback. You look at Lenora Sellers' line, okay, from this game Saturday. It's a little different in terms of passing and rushing yardage breakdown, but he impacted that game like Milroe did at LSU on Saturday night. But absolutely, I didn't think Vanderbilt was necessarily poor, but it's feeling more and more like down the stretch that offense is continuing to struggle outside of some magician type work from Diego Pavia. There's just not as much that they're getting out of their sort of their system on offense other than Pavia, and maybe when he's able to make some things happen on his own. But, you know, Vanderbilt's still in a good spot. Mid-November already got a bowl bid clinch. That's just simply something we haven't talked about much with Vanderbilt football throughout the years. But give that South Carolina defense credit too, man. They did something that some teams before them, like Texas and Alabama, didn't do to the extent that they did. And again, another week for Vanderbilt offensively, fewer than 300 total yards. It gets harder to harder to win in November, Brent.
It does. It does.
When you're not producing at a higher level than that.
And we've talked about them over the years and seen that with Vanderbilt. When you really don't want to play Vanderbilt's in September or the 1st of October, when it gets to November, it's a different story. And I hope they get some of these guys healthy, be able to win a bowl game. But still, it's been a special season for them, no question about that, and hopefully that will continue.
Hey, let's talk about in the primetime as we shift to the nighttime hours from Saturday night. We'll get going with Tennessee and Mississippi State. The Vols get out to a 20-7 lead on their way to a 33-14 win over the Bulldogs. That Tennessee defense, again, did give up 179 rushing yards, including Davon Booth for Mississippi State with 125 and a tutty on the ground, but did a nice job on Michael Van Buren, the outstanding freshman quarterback for MSU. 10 of 26, just 92 yards and an interception. From the Tennessee perspective, though, especially on the offensive side, some injury concerns throughout that game. Nico Iamaleava leaves the game. We see Gaston Moore come on, the backup quarterback. Dylan Sampson looked like he was hobbled, but he goes on to take 30 carries in the game for 149 yards. And then Dante Thornton Jr. also leaves after catching three balls for 104 yards. I guess in the aftermath from Josh Heupel, it did sound fairly positive, though, where some of those, or if not all of those injuries are concerned, because as we know, huge one coming up this Saturday night in Athens.
Listen, one thing that you and I've seen over the years, if you can run the ball and stop the run, as Gene Stallings from Alabama used to say, you can win a lot of games. And when you've got a bell cow like Sampson, Trev, I'm still not sure he gets the credit he deserves. I mean, this is a SEC most valuable offensive player candidate at this point. Through nine games, 1,100 yards. Trev, 20 touchdowns, averaging 5 yards a carry. So you give it to him twice, and he's got a first down. Look, they love Nico, and they love these Brew McCoy, Squirrel White when these guys are healthy. But if you ask me to pick an MVP for that team right now, I think I'd go with Sampson.
No, I think he has to be. If you go with an offensive MVP, I think defensively, you know, that might be where you look as well, because they are legit on the defensive side of the ball. But Sampson's the guy. You know, the last few years, Jalen Wright, you had some guys. You had a sort of stable, right? You had two or three guys.
Yes,
that you kind of depend on, not with this offense. I mean, it's pretty much Dylan Sampson that you want to go with there at the running back position. And you said it, workhorse-like performance for Sampson. And so it's just going to be, if you like line of scrimmage football and you really like hard yards, it feels like Saturday night in Athens is going to be the game for you. And then, you know, it's going to come down to quarterback play probably, because it's going to be hard, I think, for both teams to run the ball. I was a little surprised that Ole Miss had even the success it had running the football against Georgia. It didn't light up the Bulldogs on the ground, but ran it enough. And so I think, which Nico are we going to see? If it's Arkansas Nico, it's going to be tough to win in Athens. It seems like Tennessee's been at home for 2 months now, too.
You know? It really does.
I mean, it feels like Tennessee hadn't been on the road in 6 weeks or so. But Tennessee does what it needs to do, sets up that showdown. Mississippi State still trying to kind of get its legs under it in year one under Jeff Lebby moving forward. And as we move forward from Saturday night, we're going to talk about LSU and Alabama. Elimination game by all accounts, Brent. And boy, if it was, that was a rough way to go out for the LSU Tigers. Alabama really established itself from the outset of that game. Big drive to open the game, go down, take a 7-0 lead. Then to keep LSU out of the end zone after the big kickoff return. And then Caden Durham with the big run down to the 5, give Damani Jackson, the Alabama corner, credit for making a tackle at the 5. LSU can't get in the end zone. They have to kick the field goal. It's a 7-3 game. And from there, Alabama pretty much controlled the football game. It seemed like every important play in that game went the Crimson Tide's way, especially third downs.
Yeah, and as far as Brian Kelly's concerned right now against ranked opponents 4-8, which is not – settling real well with LSU fans right now. I still think the reality for this, for them, they're a year away. Their beat writers will tell you very quickly. They don't have the talent they need, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And they've got Blake Baker, Bo Davis, Corey Raymond. I mean, those guys will settle in and they'll be okay. But Trav, when you look overall for getting Alabama more with this LSU team, losing early to Southern Cal, really getting beat decisively by Alabama and A&M, even with the some of the better wins, the Ole Miss win on the final play of the game, you know, could they have lost to South Carolina if Lenore Sellers doesn't get hurt? Yeah. So, you know, I guess for any team, Trav, you know, it could be a lot better and it could be a lot worse for the Tigers.
This season for LSU will be defined in large part by quarterback runs,
yes,
quarterback runners. You said it, South Carolina, if Sellers is able to stay on the field, that very easily could have been another loss. Didn't survive Marcel Reed when he entered the game for Texas A&M for the Aggies and that comeback win for A&M over LSU. And then, you know, Alabama saw that and the South Carolina film, I'm sure, and said, you know what? We got a guy that can do a lot of these same things. And coming off the bye, he's maybe feeling better. And it looked like that Jalen Milroe on Saturday night for Alabama. It looked like Georgia Jalen Milroe. And that wasn't a good thing for LSU because even on third downs and third and not two or three, Alabama was still able to hit the runs with Jalen Milroe. And it was essentially, it seemed like the same run play over and over again, sort of a quarterback keep with the back in front of him hitting that C gap. They had obviously seen some things they liked about that. LSU was never able to deal with it. And I agree. I think Blake Baker is going to get heat now as the first year defensive coordinator. I think as much as anything, it kind of tells you that he's done a good job of sort of covering for some things personnel wise. They still have deficiencies, a couple of injuries that we talked about here on the show haven't helped that. So, you know, can they pick up pieces? The season doesn't end on November the 9th, especially in this league. So I think I'll be more interested to see LSU from this point forward and how Brian Kelly is able to keep that thing together. As for Alabama, you know, you get Mercer this week and then it's on the road at Norman and then Auburn and Tuscaloosa. So that path to Atlanta and or the CFP suddenly looks a lot more navigable.
It does. Oh yeah, absolutely it does. Trav, the Bama defense really impressed me. They kept Nussmeier on the run all night. Probably should have got to two or three more sacks. Were able to contain the run. And look, LSU got some of the better receivers Bama's going to face, and they did a pretty good job. They kept them out of the end zone, frankly. But the question I wanted to ask you is the loss of Q Robinson at linebacker, unfortunately for the year. Look, I know Bama's got some depth, but this is a guy that led them in sacks. Really unfortunate for Q that this happened, Trav. So, you know, and I'm sure this will be talked about all week long from Kalen DeBoer. Got to have some guys step up in this situation.
You do. You hate it first and foremost for Q because by all accounts, a program guy.
Yes.
Especially in these last 3 or 4 years. And now he finally gets really his opportunity. And then to see it end like that, you just hate it because he's not only an impactful guy on defense, he's been impactful on special teams. Intangibly, what he brings as a veteran to that team, not just the defense, but saw Quay Rousseau, a second-year player in there a good bit Saturday. We've seen Quay Rousseau as a starter. So he has that type of ability and that type of experience. Could be another young guy in Yonzi Pierre that's asked to step up a little bit more at this point. But I'll tell you, Jihad Campbell was lights out.
He was
in the linebacker position,
man,
for Alabama Saturday night, whether it was inside linebacker or whether they lined him up on the edge. Some Micah Parsons type of versatility there maybe with Jihad. That should help too. Not just, you know, guy for guy at the wolf position, but because they can do some different things with Jihad Campbell. And they also have a third inside linebacker that they consider a starter in Justin Jefferson. So if you want to play Jihad more out there and bring in Justin Jefferson to go along with Deontay Lawson, who may have made the play of the game, by the way, in the third quarter with the goal line interception there.
Absolutely.
In a 21-6 game. That was absolutely huge for Alabama. But we've seen it. You know, we've seen some guys for Alabama already. You know, Keon Sabb still out at the safety position. Bray Hubbard has jumped in there and played at a high level. He had another takeaway, another interception for Bray Hubbard. And as Southern Red points out here in the comments, Brent, Bray Hubbard killed it. He did.
He has.
Very good. So what you hope if you're an Alabama fan is that at that wolf position, you get that same type of next guy up mindset and performance, and give Kane Womack a lot of credit. You know, when guys are where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there, the scheme suddenly looks a lot better than it did maybe in the first six games. Now, we'll see if Alabama can sustain it. That's the big thing for Alabama moving forward. You had the bye week. It obviously came at the right time for that team. So you had 2 weeks between Missouri and LSU. Not going to be in two-week mode the rest of the way. So can this team, Brent, sustain it and continue to take the football away at a high rate? Something it has certainly done as well. What about Missouri and Oklahoma in that nightcap? What in the heck was that?
Really?
Like the last, in just the last, what, 2 minutes? Missouri won the game. Oklahoma won the game.
Yeah.
And then Missouri won the game again.
Yeah.
That's the best way I kind of know how to describe it. And boy, for Brent Venables, it's just going to be, if this thing continues the way it's going throughout the month, and Oklahoma still has Alabama and LSU down the stretch too. I know that OU made a commitment to Venables going into this thing, going into the SEC. But man, this is rough for the Sooners at this point. I mean, Drew Pine, there was no Brady Cook again.
No,
for Missouri on Saturday night. And Drew Pine throws three touchdown passes against this Oklahoma defense. And Jackson Arnold, 15 to 24, but just 74 yards. He sacked three times. It's hard to figure out where to look first with Oklahoma right now.
Well, and to back up what you're saying, their offense averaging 4 yards per play. This is amazing. Missouri forced 5 fumbles. Recovered 4 of those, got 13 points out of that. Oklahoma 5 of 15 on third down. So, you know, you're right about that, Trev. I know you've seen this, and I've got to bring this up, but this Steve Spurrier ask post game from Eli Drinkwith. Here's a quote here. Yeah, this will be real disappointing to Bob Stoops, but OU doesn't always whoop Missouri's ass.
You said it. I refer to Drink as Dollar General Spurrier. I mean, that's he's nothing close to Steve Spurrier in a lot of ways, but he can, boy, at the podium or at the post game, he can talk that talk.
He can, Spurrier.
Can he? Yeah. He keeps, like Steve, he keeps the receipts, you know, on a lot of this stuff. To the winners go the spoils, I guess, but helps Missouri, I would think. And you hear Drink, he thinks Missouri's still alive in this thing.
He does. You know? Sure. And
why not at this point?
They're not, absolutely.
Not dead at this point, but more so again from the Oklahoma perspective, because it felt like there for a fleeting moment that this was going to be a road win like the Tigers got early in the season at Auburn, you know, when it looked done. And then the defense makes the huge play late and saves the Sooners on the road. Was it meant to be? Jackson Arnold, I say this for him, though. He did catch a touchdown pass.
He sure did.
In the game. You know, that throwback. That was that was a highlight for the Oklahoma offense. But Missouri gets the job done now at 7-2, 3-2 in the league. Got 3 straight SEC games to end it for Missouri. But life support right now for Missouri, where Atlanta and beyond is concerned. Brent, that's it. That's the slate from this past Saturday in the Southeastern Conference. What else you got for us before we get out of here?
Trav, you can only play with fire so long, and the Miami Hurricanes found that out. Two things here. Now look, Miami likely again in the ACC championship game, very possibly in the playoffs, but they really can't lose another. But the thing I wanted to concentrate on here with what he's got, his Brent Key has done a really good job two years in a row to beat the Canes. So, but again, Travis, Miami could have like what, three losses at this point?
Oh,
at least,
yeah, should have at least two. So yeah. You're right. That just felt like an inevitability that someone was going to get Miami, yes. But somebody from that league's got to go to the college football playoff. And based on really? What I see around the ACC,
right?
I don't know how you still don't like Miami to ultimately be the conference champion, even with perhaps two losses or whatever, and end up in the CFP. You know, Cam Ward is a thrill a minute. He has pretty much, I think, gotten Miami to this point. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Give Brent Key a lot of credit. I didn't have that. I didn't see that coming with Brent Key.
I didn't either.
I know he's a Georgia Tech alum. I know he has pride in that program and gives everything he's got and gets it where Georgia Tech football specifically is concerned. But boy, you talk about former Nick Saban offensive line coaches. Mm-hmm. He's had it for Mario the last couple of times out, hadn't he? In that series. And so kudos to Brent Key. The two quarterback system was amazing.
Really was, wasn't it?
Same thing as the runner and then another.
Philo. Yeah, the Philo kid. Yeah.
For passer, for runner. Buster Faulkner, the Georgia Tech offensive coordinator, getting his flowers in the last few days, deservedly so. Mm-hmm. Heck of a win for Tech, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, it's going to – and by the way, in another oddity, the lone remaining unbeaten team right now in the ACC was SMU. Trapped. Did anybody see that coming?
You know, SMU can get Miami, too, when it comes down to it.
They could.
Yeah, I mean, they could. Oh, yeah. So – Rhett Lashley's got that thing going. You start to see some Florida fans with some Rhett Lashley love.
Yeah, I'm hearing some of that.
Yes. Hearing some of that. And again, with Florida, it just doesn't feel like, even with the tweet from Scott Strickland that this essentially said, yes, Billy Napier will continue as head coach with no definitive sort of time frame as a part of that statement.
No.
Boy, that talk just is not going to die down. You don't think.
It's not.
Again, with Lane. Ole Miss going to be in Gainesville in a couple weekends, so we'll see how that goes. Well, Brent, as always, a lot of fun with you right here on Second Helping. For those of you out there who haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube as of yet, we hope you'll hit that subscribe button right now. Hit the notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. And a thumbs up, a like is always appreciated as well. Brent, we'll talk about it later in the week where week 12 in the Southeastern Conference is concerned.
Good games coming up, especially that headliner travel with Tennessee at Georgia with a lot at stake, right?
Varsity game Saturday night from Sanford Stadium.
Absolutely.
In Athens. Elimination situation,
man,
for the Georgia Bulldogs. Crazy to think when just a few weeks ago, Georgia looked like a top three seed for the college football playoff. With that, for Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Second Helping. We'll rejoin you later in the week as we preview week 12. Until then, so long, everybody.